Letter to America, written by people who came from where Obama is taking America to. Then I have a quote. The American people will never knowingly adopt socialism, but under the name of liberalism, they will adopt every fragment of the socialist program until one day America will be a socialist nation without knowing how it happened. I no longer need to run as a presidential candidate for the Socialist Party. The Democrat Party has adopted our platform. Norman Mattoon Thomas, 6 times presidential candidate for the Socialist Party of America. And now the letter. Dear best country in the world, the people whom you so generously gave a gift of freedom want to warn you about the danger we foresee in your not-so-distant future. And the name of this danger is socialism. It often hides after different disguises. Sometimes it calls itself progressivism, sometimes liberalism. The adepts call themselves Marxists, Maoists, Che Guevarists. However, usually they do not want you to know what sect of socialism they belong to. This letter is written and signed by the people who have first-hand experience in socialism of all kinds, types, and varieties, and who didn't like any kind of variety of it. We didn't like it so much that at the first opportunity we packed our bags, left behind our friends, our culture, our languages, jobs, security, and ventured into the great unknown. We didn't like the totalitarian socialism of the Soviet Union or the progressive socialism of Yugoslavia, the Vietnam hard socialism or the Western European soft socialism. Not one of them. Did you ever ask yourself why there are so many Italians, Canadians, Ukrainians, Polish, Cubans, Vietnamese, Chinese in America? The answer is simple. Here is better than there. The Soviet Union was throwing us into jails just for expressing our desire to live, but we were demanding our freedom nevertheless. East Germany was killing us when we were climbing the walls they built to separate us, but even knowing that we might die, we were choosing freedom and liberty over their social justice. Cuba was drowning us in the ocean, but every night our boats were leaving their socialist paradise in the hope of reaching better life for ourselves and our families. We knew that we could end up in Vietnamese gulags or at the Cambodian killing fields, but our desire to leave the nightmare of socialism behind us was stronger even than our fear of death. They took from us everything we had, everything that our parents and grandparents left us. But even stripped of every earthly possession, we were leaving their statewide socialist prisons filled with joy and anticipation because, you see, we had a dream. We envisioned a world where we can work hard and prosper. We envisioned a world where no government, no strongman, no militia or gang could seize our possessions from us, imprison us for no reason, or kill our families on a whim. We envisioned a world where ingenuity, relentless pursuit of one's goals, sleepless nights, and hard work would earn us what we all desire, a happy and prosperous life in the secure world. America was our dream and our ideal. Not anymore. We're afraid, not anymore. When we were celebrating holidays, during family reunions, or just while dining with friends, one of us immigrants would say to the others, "Let's drink a toast to America. God bless this country that allowed us to come and build our nests and take care of our young and our old. God bless America," we're saying to each other. This is the place where those that work hard obey the laws, who are honest and sincere, are handsomely rewarded. Not anymore. We are afraid. Not anymore. We feel insecure again. We sense that tomorrow might bring us another Vladimir Lenin, and right after him another Joseph Stalin. What if, we're asking ourselves, a new Lenin, Mao, or Hugo Chavez is already in the White House? Socialists love to talk about the common good and proclaim their honorable intentions to make everyone equal and happy. Andrew Galambos the co-founder of the Free Enterprise Institute, came to the conclusion that whenever governments try to achieve its goals by social engineering, the results are just opposite of what they intended or proclaimed to do. Let us say the price of tomatoes is rising. Poor people cannot buy them, and the compassionate liberal government says, let's control the price of tomatoes, so enabling poor people to enjoy them as well. Very, very honorable intention, right? So the government issues a decree that the farmers must lower tomato prices. Next year, however, there are no tomatoes on the market for neither rich nor poor. The price limit makes growing them not as profitable as growing other vegetables, and farmers stopped growing tomatoes. Very few farmers probably will continue, but will be selling them on the black market for 10 times the price. What part of this Obama doesn't understand? The state that went the way of social justice has now two options. Either order farmers to grow tomatoes and sell them for a controlled price, despite lower profits or even losses, and punish those who will not obey, of course, or confiscate, nationalize their farms and organize a government-run tomato-growing ministry with a government-appointed czar running it into oblivion. The first option is called fascism. The second is called socialism. We do not like either option. We opt for capitalism described in the words of another great 20th century philosopher, Alisa Rosenbaum, known to the world as Ayn Rand, as the only system geared to the life of a rational being and the only moral system in history. No political economic system during the 6,000 years of recorded history of our civilization has benefited mankind as greatly as capitalism. Yes, my fellow Americans, capitalism coupled with the founding fathers' principles gave us freedom and prosperity. Under fascism, the government controls the market, tells to small and large businesses what to produce, what salaries to pay to workers, how much profit to make, and generally tells them what is needed for the people. Under fascism, what we the people really want is irrelevant. Under socialism, the state government owns all the means of production. Under fascism, the state is your boss and can order you around. Under socialism, the state is your employer, your trade union, your court, your law, your judge, your jury, and your executioner. Under both systems, the good of the state is much more important than your individual good, your rights, wealth, and health of your family. Under both socialism and fascism, the government decides how to spend the money it takes from you, whether on treatment of non-productive citizens, such as the elderly or handicapped, or on the poor but productive workers. Since they consider the good of the state to be paramount, they will clearly not choose to spend a lot on your elderly parents or on your handicapped child. The state doesn't want to spend extra money on those useless to the state beings. It is only you who is interested in your mom. If you keep your money, you spend it as you please. If the state gets the money, they will spend it as they please, serving the greater good, as they understand it. This is what we witnessed in our social countries, and this is what we escaped from. Our grandparents didn't understand the consequences of socialized medicine, but we already do. We had it for years, and we have had enough. If you think that in Great Britain they invented something that works differently, read their newspapers full of horror stories about the treatment they're getting since they made socialized medicine the law of the land. Our grandparents didn't know and couldn't even imagine, exactly as you can now imagine, that if there will be one and only source of student loans, the people who are in charge can and will decide who goes and who doesn't go to college, and which colleges get preferential treatment. Some may argue that President Obama is the greatest man in the entire universe, but what if, after him, or even during his administration, comes a bad guy, a student loan czar, who quietly will give loans only to white people, or only to colleges that teach Buddhism, or he will decide to give loans only to people with pointed ears and only in the state of Delaware. Letting one person decide on a variety of subjects will lead us to either fascism or socialism. Pick one. Every dictator, before installing an outright tyranny, attempts first to outlaw and confiscate firearms from private citizens. The dictators do not want their subjects to be able to resist. When people are weaponless, they are defenseless. There are now people in the Obama White House whose favorite philosopher is Mao, a thoughtful ruler who killed 70 million of the citizens of his own country. Joseph Stalin killed 50 million, mostly Soviets. Adolf Hitler is a distant third with only 40 million killed, most of them foreigners. You see, fascists are always behind socialists, one or two steps, but behind. Lenin, Mao, Stalin, Castro attempted to ridicule and strip people from their fate. They didn't want their people to have strong convictions. People with strong convictions are harder to subdue. One of the main goals of any socialist government is to discredit and root out religious beliefs of their constituents. Instead of religion, socialists teach their own doctrine and perverse morals at schools, colleges, and through the media. In the America of today, all manifestations of religion, except Muslim, of course, established by millennia of moral conduct and encoded in the Ten Commandments, are driven out of schools and out of our lives under the banner of equality and multicultural coexistence. However, the left does preach another religion, one of social justice, a cynical, amoral refusal to recognize evil and tolerate of crime that they simply do not call religion. Socialists, progressive, liberals, Marxists think that if they do not label their belief system religion, we will not notice. The most important and best paid people in socialist countries are the government workers. They are in a position to allow or disallow almost any action you, the citizens, want to undertake. In nearly all aspects of our lives, they are predictably unable to withstand the very human temptation to sell their favors. The more regulations the state has imposed, the more power the bureaucrats get. We would advise you to check in which sector of American economy the people now receive the best salaries and have the most benefits. Would it come as a surprise to you if we will discover that the American government workers, servers of the American nation, are now paid much better than the average citizen they serve? In the countries we left behind, the government continuously drummed into our children that the greatest person in the world is the current ruler. Starting in kindergarten, children were told daily in games, plays, and lessons that our leader is the savior of the nation. We'll live in our memories forever. Children were shown films and given books glorifying the leader and crudely ridiculing any opponents as enemies of the people. Sounds familiar? We didn't like it then. We do not like it now. In socialist countries, laws were enacted because the heads of the state wanted them enacted. President Obama says that he wants to be the leader of our democracy, but acts like he already lives not in the USA, but in the USSA, the United Socialist States of America. He recently rammed through healthcare reform is a good example. Forcing Obamacare through Congress by hook, by yes crook, and any other means to buy votes against the clearly expressed will of the popular majority of Americans, and with every Republican in Congress voting no, was a tyrannical act. This was a display of political coercion far worse than anything seen in this country so far. We didn't like it then. We do not like it now. There are laws in place that would allow the U.S. government to seize large companies that are too large to fail. But as a result, we can lose money invested in the shares of those companies. If you doubt it, look how the GM takeover was conducted by the government and how they abused bondholders' rights and gave the investors' money to the unions that, what a surprise, helped Obama get elected. Do you think it will not happen to you as well the moment our esteemed president will need more money? And he promised so much to his supporters that he will need more and more and then more. Any country that prints money like crazy will eventually have runaway inflation. If you have no savings, you need not worry. But if you manage to save, if you put aside your hard-earned dollars to help your through retirement to leave to your loved ones, then the government, by printing vast amounts of new money, is stealing your savings. They steal your lifeblood. But even worse, they steal what you would leave to your children and grandchildren. This is what socialists do in every country where they rule. It is their way of taxing us to stagnation without admitting it. Do you remember those two names, Solzhenitsyn and Sakharov? both of them from Russia, both Nobel Prize winners, first as a writer and second a physicist, both hated by the government of the Union of the Soviet Socialist Republics. Their country's political elite called them traitors, accusing them of writing that sold out the motherland. The Soviet government even told us, its citizens, that those two deserved to die for what they had written and for what they had said. However, when asked whether they had actually read the books and articles they so strongly condemned, and what exactly those two were writing, the Soviet apparatchiks would say, "I personally didn't read it, but I was told." Is this not strikingly similar to what is now happening in the United States? The Democratic Party bosses accuse the authors of Arizona immigration law of inciting racial profiling, bigotry, racism, hatred. Yet when asked to provide specific examples of language in this terrible document encouraging such racial profiling, all those activists, including Attorney General Eric Holder, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, State Department officials, reply, "I didn't read it myself, but I was told." What do you think? Are they really that stupid that they didn't read it, or they are lying through their teeth in order not to be asked what specifically they didn't like in this law? Below are words of David Kaiser, a known and well-respected historian. Whom do you think he was writing those words about? Here it is. How did he get people on his side? He did it by promising jobs to the jobless, money to the moneyless, rewards for the military-industrial complex. He did it by indoctrinating the children, advocating gun control, health care for all, better wages, better jobs, and promising to reinstall pride once again in the country and across the world. He did it with a compliant media. And he did this all in the name of justice and change. And the people surely got what they voted for. Did you guess already? No, he wasn't talking about Obama. He was talking about Adolf Hitler, the leader of the National Socialist German Workers' Party, a party of national unity and change. Change, change, change. We're slowly losing our freedoms. We're gradually losing our properties. We're willfully losing our friends around the world. We're losing our superiority in science. We're losing our military might. We were winners who many feared and many hated, but we were the ones on whose shoulders the modern world stood. Now we're losers whom no one cares for. The only way to stop it is to vote Democrats out of their offices at the upcoming elections in November 2010 and retire the rest of them in 2012. On behalf of those who came from the place Obama wants to take us to, on behalf of those who suffered under socialism, of those who do not want their children to suffer the same fate under self-proclaimed liberals, progressives, or Marxists, we are saying no more. No more. Signed, Leon Weinstein, U.S. citizen, emigrated from the USSR in 1974.